like a little meeting to decide, like, you know, who we want to call on, stuff like that. Okay. I can't think of a, you know, a better person to co-host with than Yonatan. Okay, so let's begin. Sorry we're a little bit late. And again, with these circumstances are a little bit less than ideal for what we're trying to accomplish. But next week, we should have more time, especially in the next couple of weeks. We'll try to do this, finish this topic. I'll give you more proper marmakomos. I'll be in person. Was there a consensus in terms of the timing, Asher or Josh or Avrami, or in terms of should we do like 10:30, 11, 1 for the next Tuesday, Thursday? They'll be in person from now, the next 2-3 weeks.
Two people mentioned that it would be a little easier for them at 11, but I didn't get any other feedback.
Okay, Josh, anything to add to that? Josh, there he is. Like, Josh is there. We're not hearing him. They must, again, you know, poor Josh. Like, they put him in the box there.
I know. I think that's fine.
That's fine?
Other people want to voice concerns. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, again, in case there are conflicts, so let's just make it Tuesday, Thursday at 11. Okay. And maybe we'll try to do, after this topic, there seems to be some popular interest in Taluy in, you know, Kfiya and Taluy Vizavin. Right? A share?
Definitely.
Okay. And Josh originally indicated that to me. So, okay. So unless that changes, we'll try to do something on that. And then maybe we'll get in one other bigger topic too. Okay. So let's begin. Instead of all this, you know, again, if Ellie were here, we could call this pre-shear banter, but you know, since Ellie's not here, I don't know that we can use that terminology. Okay, so yeah, we were in the middle of discussing Nasgut Rav Abba, really a landmark, you know, just like they talk about, you know, landmark Supreme Court cases, you know, Brown versus, you know, Board of Education, or there's another one actually that's getting a lot of attention right now. I just forgot the name, not really. But in the world of, you know, Talmudic rulings, Nasgut Rav Abba is like a shem davar of equivalent stature. When we discussed the Rambam Shita, you know, agav other things, when we were discussing topics in the first parak, I already made the ha'ara, and that is that it's very, very rare in the Rambam. I'm not sure how many other cases there are in the Rambam. And I don't know if anybody ever notices one way or another, but in the Rambam Ziyada Chazaka, for him to quote a ruling in the Gemara by name, like, oh, this is Nasgut Rav Abba, which is what he does, is like just extraordinary. Again, is it the only time in all Yad Chazaka, that he does that? I can't say with certain, but I don't remember another one off the top of my head. It doesn't really matter. The point is that if he does it other times, it's very, very rare. But it's like saying, you know, Roe v. Wade or Brown versus Board of Education. You just have to say the words Nasgut Rav Abba. And, you know, everybody, you know, who is immersed in the system, you know, they start smiling or frowning or whatever it is that they do. But like everybody knows what it is. It's a case. It's a legal concept that, you know, became known by the, you know, initial discussion of the case. There are cases, many, you know, in different legal systems, there are cases like that. But that's what we mean by a landmark case. So what is it makes Nasgut Rav Abba such a landmark case? So the answers are two elements. Number one, that, you know, it's the most, or one of the, you know, it's an example of something, you know, which itself is unbelievably consequential, namely the principle of mitoch, She'ena yachal ishava mishalim, which is the interface between, or the conversion of chiyu shvua into chiyu mamon, which of course is the big, big, you know, issue. It highlights that, you know, crossover point between shvua and mamon, you know, and thereby redefines, depending on how you understand the parameters of it, like how can one kind of obligation, you know, mutate into another. Now, so far I'm not saying anything with content, I'm just trying to like take a step back a little bit and provide a little appreciation for, like, you know, not only how famous and important this case is, but why? Because it really is, it's like a fault line in Hilchos Shavuos and Hilchos Eidos, both, and in the interface between them. So that's number one. And number two, and that alone would have made Naskar Rababa a landmark case. But I think the second point is what we began trying to analyze last time, which is that there are in the actual formulation of the issues and concerns in the Gemara, it says like every phase, in addition to being technically a little bit of a seeming discrepancy between the words of the Gemara and the way that they're interpreted by the Rishonim, which alone is a phenomenon, it's just the difficulty of understanding why there isn't like a simpler path. But that's such a foundational question that you know, that you need to address it. So on points, on the first point, the interface between Shvua and Mammon and the status of Eidacha and so on, of course, we're going to elaborate more on those issues. We've touched on them because they come up all over the place in Choshen Mishpat, but this is a good place to elaborate them a little more. You know, whether Chiyuv Shvua is a Ptur, whether it's a form of Chiyuv Mammon, what about Eidacha and its relationship to Shnayim Eidim? And we'll start, we don't have so much time, but we'll start discussing that a little bit today as well. But before we do, let's continue where we began, which is just identifying the factors in the Gemara itself. So as far as that is concerned, right, the way that we began with it was Heichid Dainu Daini Lahaidina, like, you know, anatomy. The Gemara itself understood it, by the way, like, you know, like this is an anatomy of a psak. You know, really. So the Gemara says, Leika Trei Sahade, I'm just repeating, getting us back to where we were, Leika Trei Sahade, Liftari. And that sounds like a huge principle. And that is, even if the two, you know, the difference between one aid and two aid don't really amount to anything substantive, because either way, what the aidim, one or two, or just Todah Spadin witness, is insufficient to decide the case, because the case really revolves not around physically what took place, but the legal interpretation of what took place. Because the guy says in Chatfi, right, the problem is whether or not his Tainav Didi Chatfi can be Neman, given the Chazak of Kol Mashatakas Yadadam Hareyu Shalom. So given that that is the case, who cares whether there's one aid or two aidim, or, you know, or no aidim? Once, you know, if the power play is between Kol Mashatakas Yadadam Hareyu Shalom on the one hand, and the Tainas Ptur of Didi, you know, Didi Chatfi, like, so, you know, why is this an issue? Bishlama, if there's a factual dispute between the parties on what, you know, what took place, you know, that Edom are Machria, and that you only Edom can be Machria, that makes a lot of sense. So the Gemara here, that, I'm just trying to highlight a little bit what's so amazing about the sugya. But so when the Gemara says, you know, Leika Treisade Lifterei, you know, it sounds like there's some rule that in general, you know, any case that is won by virtue of any kind of edus, you know, that there's a difference between two and one. And that's very astonishing. Almost all Rishonim have to undo that line in the Gemara in this case, as we discussed, that we discussed already. The question is, how do you undo it? So the way that the Rishonim went in this is that implicitly, it's not the one aid or two aidim, because that's not the issue. The issue revolves around, you know, not the chatifa, but the implication of the chatifa, the komach shetachas yadanim arayim shalom. And therefore, the Rishonim introduced as completely implicit in the Gemara that this is all about biku. But it's a striking that it's not in the text itself. By the way, this is basically what we encountered, Josh. Exactly. Excellent, exactly. When we talked about Lefikach in the first parak, you know, what we noted was, like, you know, again, there's this line, Lefikach. It, you know, this, not a line, I mean, it's the whole, this Lefikach, you know, Motzu v'chemero olav araya. And Bepashtus, you know, it all is a standalone. And it's, you know, they're, it's also kind of a landmark, you know, kind of idea of how far you push Motzu v'chemero olav araya. So it's the same issue, basically, because this is Chazaka Komashataka Sadabrin Shalom. On a Metaltalan level, that's the Lefikach on the Motzu Mechorea Olav Araya on a Karka level more, or whatever. And in both cases, the Rishonim, in that case, the Balitosis, it could be the others don't interpret that way on Lefikach, introduced, right, Josh? Migu. The implicit, really, really, what's going on here is counter balancing a taina, which would have changed everything, but which is unstated in the sugya, namely miku. So I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, these are it's also not a coincidence that the Rishonim in Lefikach, right, were quoting Rabbeinu Yonah, the Rajba, right? They were quoting Chazaka Kamasha Taka Sanamari Shalom, and they were quoting Naskid Rababa. And they were quoting Kol Da'alam Gavar, both because the issues at stake are very similar and because the interpretation of the Gemara in their estimation, in all cases, is really about the invisible, I wouldn't say the invisible enemy, because, you know, I like migus, and migus aren't enemies, the invisible factor, namely migu. Now, the fact that it is invisible doesn't mean that it's any less part of the sugya, as you can see in the Rishonim. It doesn't mean, again, I'm just pointing out the phenomenon. I'm pointing out the phenomenon because it's what's happening here. And of course, by pointing it out, I'm also implying that in theory there could be other readings. In the case of the Lefikach, there were. And here also in principle there could be. I'm not pointing it out to challenge that it's a correct or maybe even the most correct reading. There are many times where, you know, again, you know, when you, you know, eliminate the impossible, so you have to start assuming things. The implicit as a pshat factor in whether it's in parshanut or in law, shakavatari the Gemara, is a very powerful thing. But that's really what's going on in this sugya. Now, once that is the case, so then the question becomes, you know, A, are there alternative readings? But also, if the migu is playing such a central role, then, you know, how central a role is it actually, even in the rest of the Shakavatari, the Gemara? So then on the next line, this is just so far review, but review, call it review and a little bit of extra context. So on the next line of the Gemara, when the Gemara says, lifterei, question mark, ike echad sahada, so as we discussed, many Rishonim, you know, are inclined to say, oh, the real issue is, what's the story when you have a migu in which the alternative taina would have required a shvua? So does that eliminate a migu? A typical migu is like, I have an easy path to victory. Since I am bypassing, you know, that path for the taina, my authentic real taina, I call it the potential taina and the real taina, right? I have the potential taina is an easy path to victory. Since I'm bypassing that, so what impact does that have on the real taina that I make? But typically, right, the potential winning taina is not burdened by anything. Like in the most classic migus, right, that's an easy victory without any qualifications. So whether you say birur, which basically means there's no interrelationship whatsoever between taina A that I could have made and taina B that I make, except that taina A externally establishes me as an adam nema, as a man of credibility. And that bolsters, right, my credibility in the taina that I'm in. But if you say koach ha-taina, the other way to say it is the koach ha-taina way, whatever you want to call it. Again, the terminology doesn't matter to me. But the koach ha-taina way is saying something a little bit different, and that is that somehow there's a connection. Somehow the potential taina that I have to win directly or materially affect, and it doesn't just, it's not made begavra on my credibility, which in turn strengthens my second claim, my real claim. It is somehow related to the balance of power, the way I understand it at least, between the Bali Dinim, and therefore it provides me a stronger platform or a stronger starting point. It gives me somehow leverage, whether it's I believe it is a kind of mukzakus. Others feel it's more, you know, kind of just a din, like you're a winner, so if you won, it's yours to lose, not just in the mukzakus sense, but like, you know, some people go further with it. They say that the pshat in the migu of koach ha-taina is ki'ili made that first taina. Of course, in birur, that's not necessary at all. It's not true at all. And even in the way that I'm interpreting, it's really not true. But there are those in the migu world, and there are some very fascinating migu applications out there, you know, that might support the view that, oh, his potential taina, you know, makes him the winner. That's really the one that counts. Why is this important? It's important for, you know, what we're discussing here, which is, let's say the pathway to the migu is complicated by taina rishona, the potential one, requiring a shua. Now, again, so is that the words of, is that what these words of the Gemara mean when they say, lifterei, like ika chad sada, the pashtus is, what the Gemara is saying is, you have an eidachad, this eidachad is interfering with the victory. You know, you basically have an argument between two people. They both agree that chatvi, or chataf, and the argument is whether didi chataf or didach, you know, or you know, chataf, like whose was originally. And then the Gemara is saying, well, you know, right now it's in the hands of the second guy, so he's the new, you know, toface. And then the Gemara is saying, yeah, but there's an eidachon connect them. And some Rishonim will read that way, because that, at least you can read that way. It's easier to read that way, you know, it's the pashtus way in the second line of the Gemara than it is in the first line of the Gemara. But Rashi and the Rajbam and others are not interpreting that way, right? They're interpreting based on their hemshech of the sugya that, you know, originally, again, the first line of the Gemara was, even though there's a chazaka, let that chazaka be neutralized or overridden by the migu. And then the second line of the Gemara is, this is a very flawed migu. Why is it a very flawed migu? Because it's a migu where the potential taina requires a shvua. Okay? So this, of course, also, this is where they get to invoking the Gemara in Bava Basra, and of Ayin Amar Aleph, because that's also a case where you have a migu, where the Gemara itself seems to discuss you have a migu, right? Migu di ba yamar nenasti, you know, Nemalomar Hechzarti. But the Nanasti, whatever called, that seems to be the Shakuntari of the Gemara. That's a case where the potential for his taina is complicated by the presence of a shu. And the Gemara seems to say there, though, that there can be circumstances where you can neutralize that within the Migu problem by taking a shvua. Okay, so whereas for the Ravan, I don't know if people got a chance to look at the Ravan or not, but I'm just going to leave it to the side for a moment. I just still want to go back to read it because there are a bunch of things there. But the Ravan doesn't interpret the Gemara in terms of Migu, he interprets it in terms of Pesha Asar, and therefore a little bit it's more like, ah, there's a Pesha Asar, but the Pesha Asar is also challenged by the presence of the Eidachon. But that's not the interpretation of, at least the initial interpretation, of the Bali Tosis. Bali Tosis is more, this is a question of Migu, when the Taina HaRishona, right, is encumbered by Eshvu. So that's kind of where, we are. And then we discussed the question of Tosfos. And that's, what is the story with the Sugyan Bav Basra and whether it makes a difference whether or not the Shavua, and I think there are two issues. One is, does it make a difference whether the Shavua that would have been required in Taina Rishona is Doraisa Drabanan? I was adding to the equation, maybe the issue is not only Doraisa Drabanan, but the issue both for Doraisas and for Drabanans, although you might break it down in terms of Doraisa Drabanan, is whether or not the Shavua is something the absence of which undercuts the substance, right, of his relationship, to victory in this case. The more that that is true, the more, in other words, that the Shavua is not tertiary or peripheral, lahafiz daito, kedei sheyoda, something like that. But it's really a birur, or the code, his victory basically is dependent on the Shavua. So then, it's not really true if you take the Koach HaTaina perspective, that he's in the driver's seat, that he's the victor, and it's his to lose, whether it's however you want to explain it. Because what you might say is, until somebody takes that Shavua, this is not a victorious path. That's an interesting question. Let's say I could win the case if I take a Shavua. We're not talking about you're not going that route. Like, if you're going that route, you could say, well, then take the Shavua and win. Don't take the Shavua and don't win, right? But since we're trying to figure out the impact of Taina Rishona on changing the balance of power, with the residual effect on Taina Shnia, right, either in terms of the Gavra, the relationship of the Gavras, are they equal, or just, even in terms of like the muksakos on the money, et cetera. So then that's a really interesting question to ask. namely, in the absence of any factor, if it's a peripheral thing, you could have said extreme things here is what I'm trying to say. You could have said, well, any additional obstacle is anyways going to be ma'akev, because until the person, even if it's conceptually not, crucial, because until the person does it, he's not a winner. Like, how much does it take to disrupt, victory, especially when it's victory based on, a potential taina? The answer is not much. You could have said the opposite. You could have said, as long as it's up to him, meaning it's within his power, even if what's lacking is something fundamental, but it's fundamental biyado. Again, we find this in many other sugyas. If it's biyado, it's kind of not mechusar maisa. So since this is all about the potential, and his ability, so it goes with that. So you could have gone either extreme. Is it reasonable to take the middle position, which is, if this is something, which is a, kind of a tafel requirement, then we said, of course, you have to do that too, but basically you're a winner. You're a winner even without that thing, just that doing that thing is also necessary, but you're a winner. And that's what counts. Or no. So that's kind of what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting when it comes to this line of the Gemara, according to a good chunk of the Rishonim and the Sugyan Bav Basra, the Fahinam and Aleph, is that you could be mechalek. You could have, as I say, taken either extreme views. Anything, any obstacle is an obstacle which denies what anyways is a precarious idea like Koach HaTaina. Remember, a lot of the Rishonim don't think Koach HaTaina probably exists at all. We can all understand why it wouldn't exist. It's hard to explain why it would exist. Let me take a step back on that one. I think all of us in the, analyzing Migu, I think we'd all agree, right? Again, I have to find out if Josh agrees, But it's only a compliment. He just has a way of different thing. But I think all of us would agree default that Birur is a very logical category. And that, you know, makes a lot of sense. The only thing you'd say about Birur is that, listen, you know, people anyway start off with a cheskas kashrus, you know, that they're telling the truth. So, like, what can Birur, what can Amigo of Birur add to that? But of course, since there's also a dispute between people in the case that we're talking about, so the idea that the Migo of Birur, you know, can push you over the edge, again, you could have argued and said, no, I mean, your cheskas kashrus, it's almost like trey trey, you know, or trey kameya. You know, nothing on the Birur level is going to help you because, you know, we believe you, you have cheskas kashrus. That would be the argument against Migo of Birur, frankly. But in terms of otherwise, in terms of logic, like if somebody explains to you, oh, you know, he's if he's a liar, he has a better lie. Therefore, that proves that he's telling the truth or that he's an honest man and he's telling the truth. And I think those emphases are a little different, too, but they're both very logical. I think we can all understand the logic of that. The Koach HaTaina idea, you know, is on the one end more understandable because you don't have to get into that whole cheskas kashrus having been like the equivalent of trade. Trey or Trey Kameh or anything like that, because you're saying, oh, it's about the, you know, it's about the balance of power. But it's a big chiddush to say that the potential taina that I would have, you know, gives, changes the balance of power. Because I didn't take it. I could take it. But once you're saying that idea, you know, then you understand how it fits in. But then there are all sorts of other questions to ask. And that's kind of what we're asking right now. That's why I'm spending a couple of minutes on this, which is if there's more than, you know, just, you know, pursuing this path or the fact that you could, if in pursuing this path, there are more, you know, requirements. So, you know, how disruptive is that to engendering this mechudash category, which it's easy to deny the whole Koach HaTaina is what I'm trying to say. You know, the path that he could have taken, you know, is a hypothetical, you know, insignificant category. That's what you would have said. Right? Who says that the path, you know, that you could have chosen, you know, can ever be a chalos? But if it can be a chalos, so then are you going to be hyper, you know, makbid that everything be smooth sailing? Or once you're already in that path, you're saying, well, you know, if his, you know, potential path taken is relevant, you know, and it's all about what he could do, as long as it's not mechusar ma'isa, that's great. So what I'm suggesting is maybe there's a difference between, you know, where what's absent, what where the question mark in the path that could have been taken is more fundamental, you know, or less fundamental, because he's not a winner without it, maybe. So that could be the difference between Daraisas and Darabanan, Shuas. Or it could just depend on the nature of the Shvua itself, on a Daraisa level, right? Or on a Darabanan level. Whereas either way, from a Birur point of view, all you should really care about is that, you know, you have sustained the credibility argument. And sustaining the credibility argument just requires that he be, you know, willing to take a Shvua in the Taina that he actually presents. Anyways, so when Tosas has three deos here, right, about in the beginning, as we read already, I don't want to repeat the reading of it. But when Tosas, you know, discusses Migu di Bayomar, discusses Sugin Balbasra, you know, Manawa. This shock of the Tari Nasgar Baba, and then Rabbeinu Tam makes a suggestion that maybe we'll just sing, then, we can now more fully appreciate, you know, what that might be based on. But I say, Daraisa Drabanan is a great point. And maybe within Daraisa, as I was suggesting the other day, right, there's a difference between Shvuah Seidachad, Shvuah Seashomrim, Shvuah Seamor Demiktsas, because in general, they're all three Shvuah Daraisa, but, you know, they're that doesn't make them identical in terms of the Mechaivim and the role that the Shvuah plays. And that in each case is going to be a separate issue. But the more we speak in terms of Koach HaTaina, you know, the more that becomes, all of that becomes, you know, a factor. Whereas the Rabban, which again, when I get the text in front of me, I'll go over it more fully, isn't speaking about Migu, he's speaking about Pesha Asar. Pesha Asar isn't about, assuming that Pesha Asar isn't just Migu di Bai Shasek, but it's stronger than that. It's more of a, you know, I introduced this, and therefore I'm the Bailim, you know, with respect to the parameters of it. Like, you know, either take everything or take nothing, but you don't have the luxury, you know, of doing a kind of palginan dibure. So then, you know, that is a little bit of a different issue. And that's why I think the Ravan, not surprisingly, sees it as more as, oh, what happens if you have a migu or a pesha asar? Great. But what if you have a migu, or let's say in this case, a pesha asar kineged a nachad, right? If, you know, it isn't just his word, you know, chat in chatfi vididi, you know, chatfi. In this case, it's the response to an einacha. Is that even Pesha Asar, frankly? Maybe it would be a migu, because migu is a response to a taina, but then you get into the other issues. But as Pesha Asar, maybe, you never look at Pesha Asar's response to a taina. Pesha Asar, the whole point is that he's initiating his own problem. But here he's initiating his own problem only partially, because there's also an einachad out there. He's initiating, the depth, he's not initiating his own. That is, of course, the third line of the Gemara. Yehuda, what's the third line in the Gemara? Fact. The biggest mystery. First mystery in the Gemara, I'm just trying to show that in this case, 2 and 1 8, but it's in cases that typically are not issues of 2 and 1 8. Right? Which is why the whole Migu or Pesha Asar gets introduced here, because otherwise it doesn't, you know, it's hard to understand how to read it. Then came the second line. The second line was, well, you're not going to let him go scot-free because of his whatever, his migo or his pesha asar. So why is that? So that gets you into the whole question, oh, the alternative path would have been b'chayiv him a shvua. By do we care? Can you offset that by actually being nishba? What about the Gemara Baba Basra? Does it depend on whether it's a shvua d'oraisa d'rabbanan, whether there's a discrepancy between the shvua that you will take and the shvua you would have taken, you know, and so on and so on. All the issues that we just discussed. Or maybe it's just pesha asar, pesha hitir, b'makom einachad, which is a fascinating question. Good. Now comes the third line of the Gemara, Yehuda, which is why? Again?
The kagazlan dami?
Oh, looks like you're in the middle of a base medrash there.
Yeah, a little bit. That's, yeah.
Is that a problem, or you can still speak?
No, I still I have a swim around.
Looks like a thriving base Spanish. Sounds like June's bun is going gangbusters.
But the line came under Amr Dechatva have like a gazlan.
Right, yeah, since, but before we get that, so what's the question? Lishtaba.
Right, so he should make a shvua, right? But since
then the Gemara answers, so now there are two very distinctive ways to interpret the Gemara's question.
Right. So I mean, I think the first way, I think that's, it's brought in the Ravan a little bit, but I think also isn't Rashbam here, Rashi and Shavuot, I remember, but is that it ruins his capacity to make a Shavua because Gazlanim aren't allowed to make Shavua. And then the second is that, you know, you could also argue that's limited to this case.
Before we even get to that, what is the Shavua, what's the Shavua going to say? What's the purpose of it?
So maybe the purpose of Shavu was to say that it was mine in the first place. or even just, or that it's DD, or you could have the double, you know, double punch with it, you know, Chatvi, but DD Chatvi.
So this is the issue. In other words, if, and this is the bigger, I'll let you go back to mute because it's probably, you know, but thank you. Right, this is the big question. Why can't you just, if the whole point is that you have, you would be potter if there weren't an Eidachar, and the Eidachar is Mechayiv, you would Shvua. So why can't you just be Nijma? So this becomes, I mentioned before, like, you know, that, that part of what's landmark about this case, in addition to the other objective things, you know, the interface of Shvuah and Eidachar and Mamon and Shvuah and so on, is how difficult these lines in the Gemara are. And of course, this is the most difficult of all, where the Gemara says, why don't you just take a Shvuah? There's an Eidachar. All you need to say, Yehuda just said correctly, is in Chatvi, take a Shvuah, in Chatvi, v'didi Chatvi. The pashtus is you can just clarify with a Shvuah your position, and that should work. What's the problem with that? But there's another aspect, and that is, according to the Rishonim, who have been interpreting that the Shakla V'Tarya until now is about Migu, and the problem that Migu encounters, because the potential taina would have engendered a shvuah, and somehow that undercuts Migu. Because of that, it could be that what the Gemara is really telling us is that the problem is internal to all of this. Namely, it's why doesn't the fellow, really what we're asking is, there's a way to preserve or to rehabilitate, what are we saying? The problem is, to begin with, that if there aren't two Adim, you should be Naman B'Migo. Migo di Bayamar, lo Chatvi. Right? Then they say, oh, but if he says Migo di Bayamar lo Chatvi, then what? There would have been a Chiyuv Shvua. So now the Gemara is asking, let's take that way first. Now the Gemara is asking, good, so take the Shvuah. Win with the Migu, but there's a way to rehabilitate the Shvuah by being Nijma. Right? That's how some of the Rishonim are reading here. In other words, what I'm trying to suggest is there are two ways to read. When the Gemara says Lishtaba, there are two ways to read Lishtaba. One is Lishtaba to just get rid of the Eidachar. Right? And the other is Lishtaba to get rid of the obstacle to the Migu. So if we're saying Lishtaba to rehabilitate the Migu, then what's the Gemara's final answer when the Gemara says that you can't do it? Ha'amar michtav chatva, the kivad amar de chatva, havalei kagazlan. So if you look at, so one possibility in the Rishonim seems to be that the, based back, let's go back for a second to the Sigin Bava Basra Daf Ayin Amud Aleph, that when can you rehabilitate a Migu, right, which is jeopardized by the fact that the Taina number one, right, requires a Shvuah. When can you neutralize that problem? Bava Basra Ayin Amud Aleph esque wise, let's say, by taking a Shvuah, when the Shvuah is similar, or at least isn't opposite, of the Shvuah that you would have taken. Right? But here, what's the Shvuah that you would have taken? Akiva, Finkelstein. What Shvuah would you have taken if you had done alternative number one?
Lo Chatavti.
Exactly. You would have said Lo Chatavti. And what's the Shvuah that you're taking now?
Didi Chatavti.
Exactly. So maybe what the Gemara is saying is you can't solve the Inaskar Rabbah. You can't solve the problem of migu requiring a shvua, but by taking the shvua in the actual taina, if it's not the same shvua, or if it's the opposite shvua. I'm not sure. It's possible that that's what Rashi has in mind on Mem Zayin Amud Aleph and Shua. Somebody have that line for a moment? That it's the wrong Shua, basically. I mean, typically, even in the Baal Basra case, it's not the exact same Shua, but it's closer. Here it's the opposite Shua. Anybody have, do you have it there, Akiva? The Rashi and Mem Zayin?
Which you were masculine? Is it?
The Shava?
Oh, you also in the base medrash?
I jumped in.
What?
Yehuda jumped in. Yehuda jumped in.
Oh. Hi, Yehuda. Good. By the way, it's good to be in the base medrash.
I like it.
And you're just like, you know, you're letting us all participate, which is great. Yeah. What do you got? You have it?
Rashi l'shtava on Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. L'shtava says Shavua she'ed mechayvo inu yachol the mode of the chata ve'ed mechayvo l'shtava shelo chata v'gabei hach Shavu hu pasul k'gazlan it's a kol Shavuos.
It sounds like he's also saying a point. You know that why?
That because he, you know, has established himself as a gazlan because he said that he's or he has to be mode of his chata that that he is a puzzle for all shvuos because he lost his, you know,
right. But before we get there, it sounds first like it's the wrong shvua. Right. Sounds like 2 points, right?
Yeah.
So that I think is a very interesting question. Getting back to before we get to the second point about the gazel, which we'll get to in just a second, and that goes to the question again of koach hataina, right, versus birur. In other words, is it important if you're trying to rehabilitate a migu, again, which requires a shvua, where the potential taina requires a shvua, and you're trying to compensate for that by providing a shvua on the real taina, so that, let's say, so from a birur point of view, I say, all things being equal, assuming it's the same kind of shvua, or that, you know, that part we don't really care about in terms of, as long as it doesn't reflect on your honesty, because it's not like, oh, like, does it make sense that the reason you're going for number two, like the discrepancy between no shvua and a shvua is a big enough that it undercuts the birur. But if you're going to be nishba, right, in order to win the real taina with the migu shel birur, because of the, that would have been a requirement in the first taina, that unless there's some difference between the shvuos subjectively or psychologically, you know, that explains why you would be nishba in one case and you wouldn't be nishba in the other, then you've neutralized the problem. However, what if you take the koach hataina approach? Right, so there, is there any requirement specifically that you'd be dealing with the same kind of shvua? Right, I'll ask Asher again, since I basically asked him, you know, the parallel question the other day. Asher, what do you think?
Doesn't seem so likely, unless you want to say, I don't know, to put yourself into that same legal position, you need to have the identical type of shvua. I'm not sure if the content of the shvua would be so relevant.
Right. It goes to what I said before a little bit, which is how far do you want to push this idea of koach hataina? I mean, according to my understanding of it, which is that it's kind of like a muksakos between the parties. So it's more about, it's not that, you know, it's not that you kind of transfer, you know, like the real taina is the taina that you didn't make, or you're getting the, you know, your role or your status, like in this case, is a function of had of the potential taina that you could have made. Put it that way. That's how some people do see koach ha-taina, to be some of the achronim. I don't go that far, you know. So for me, per se, the need to require exactly, you know, the same shvua or the same kind of a shvua should be unnecessary, as long as, and the bigger question would be the question that we discussed on Tuesday, which I've kind of expanded on today, which is to what extent does that remaining obstacle, right, neutralize the status of, oh, you're a winner, you know, it's your case to lose, et cetera. And that depends on some of the other factors that we explore. But for those people who think that Koach HaTayin is kind of, I wouldn't say they think it's mystical or, but they think it's like a certain, there's a certain like legal maneuver that takes place. And that is, oh, it's as if you did take that taina. And that's how we treat it. And they, I think Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, when he discusses, I think he's going to use the language of the difference between birur and the manus. Is that right? Does that sound right? I usually like saying schus ha-taina or koach ha-taina or something. Other people do also. But I think Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, who wrote a lot about Migu, both in his, you know, Peirushim to like Bav Basra, Ksuvis, you know, where we have, you know, the Ha'aros, but also in some of the Simanim, you know, that he put out in the volume in Kovetz Shurim that are Simanim. I think he always uses the expression Birur and Amanus. Is that right, Asher? I would ask Tani, but I don't know if that's, you know, that true, Tani? Or just...
He does, yeah, he does, though.
He does, right? So I think, but I think sometimes he uses it, what he calls namanus, which we're kind of calling schutz or koach ha-taina, in a way that it almost just, I think he never really explains how it works so well. Again, I can't say that I've read all the pieces. And this is an accumulation over, you know, quite a period of time. But like my impression is he doesn't really or usually explain it. It's more like the birur is a birur, that's self-explanatory. And the koach ha-taina or the namanus, as he calls it, is like a din. And that it's because it's heavily, like, it's heavily founded on that potential, on the path not taken. But it's the idea behind it is, you know, we treat it as if you did. So once you're treating it as if you did, do you actually need that shvua, or can you have the opposite shvua as the rehabilitation of the koach of koach ha-taina or the nemanus of, you know, taina rishona, which he didn't take? So I think, but either way, that is one way that you could potentially read our Gemara. And I think that some of the rishonim imply that in the first view of Rashi and Shavuos in particular. And that's the shock of the Tariyav. Again, this is just so remarkable that that's how they're reading into these lines in the Gemara. Namely, Lishtaba, let him take a shvua to neutralize and rehabilitate the problem of the Migu so he can get back to the Ptur Migu, right? And the answer is, Ha'amar Mechtav Chatva. You know, that shvua is not going to work. If the shvua was parallel, great. But the shvua is not parallel. The shvua is opposite. The shvua that he would take if he had gone the other path, the potential path, right, alternative one, would have been to say lo chatvi. The fact that he could say, if he had said lo chatvi, he would have won the case. So we're giving him the benefit as if he won the case by saying lo chatvi because he's saying chatvi, right? So that mekivin d'amar d'chatvas habale kegazlan, not in the broader sense, but like vis-a-vis the Taina Rishona. So I think that's a very interesting reading, and that's like something that feeds the extreme. But I agree with Asher's reluctance a little bit, or with his, you know, reticence, we'll say. Even though, again, I think the more you say Koach HaTaina, the more But again, my Kochatina is closer to the Birur than I think Rabbi Chanan Wasserman's, you know, is, even though it still remains, you know, quite different in many respects. Okay, so that's one option, and I think it really highlights, again, Tani, we're going to have Tani do the research, but I am right about the Nemanos and the Birur thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Find me a couple of examples. Find me a couple of examples if, you know, where he kind of really sees the what he calls the Nemanos as if he was really towing that way. Of course, he wasn't, but you know, that's the din of Migu. It's like we project, you know, as if he had said Taina Rishona. If he doesn't, again, you know, obviously there could be, you don't have to be fully consistent when you say that, because it's already like a very creative legal idea. So, but it, to me, the evidence comes from ever saying it, not from whether or not you're always saying it. But okay, anyways, that's one. On the other hand, most of the Rishonim don't interpret that way. How do most of the Rishonim interpret? Chaim book? Oh, you look like, are you also in the base Medrash?
No, I'm in the Shirim.
Oh, Shirim looks good too. Okay. We'll be back on Tuesday. Okay, you getting ready for us?
Yeah.
Okay, terrific. Okay, go ahead. So what is the, how do most Rishonim interpret this line? This is the key line. This is like the issue. Like, why not? Lishtaba, right? The answer is Ha'amar Michtav Chatva. Right, the text that we have, the Kibbutz Omer Chatva, Havale Gazlan, Havale Kagazlan. What? What do you mean is Kagazlan? The whole point is that his Shvua is being Mavarer, that he's not a Gazlan. Right? Again, the way I interpreted a moment ago, which I was suggesting some Rishonim do, is the other way. It's like, no, I mean, if he's, what's he going to be Nijba? He's going to be Nijba in the first Taina that he was Chataf. That he's a Gazlan, meaning that can't be. But let's say we're dropping that for now. We're not trying to neutralize, or if we are trying to neutralize, we're either trying to neutralize the Migo or we're just trying to neutralize the Eid Echad. You know, either way, Eid Echad is Mechai B'Shvuah, right? If we were to believe him that he's that Didi Chatfi, there wouldn't be a problem. So let him take that as a Shua. So the answer is what? What's the most we showed him? Take the position?
He has to be able to contradict the Eid Echad.
I don't know if that's most Rishonim, but right. So there are two basic approaches here. And that's what we want to continue to speak of. Hopefully we'll try to knock a lot of this off on Tuesday. I'll get Marmokomos to you also by then. One is, whose interpretation is that, Chaim?
That you have to Rashbam.
Rashbam, it sounds like, you know, Rashi, at least one of the places in Shavuos. And who else? Among the great rabbinic authorities of all time. Unparalleled in his contribution to halachic thinking, writing.
Based on that, I guess the Rambam.
Yeah, very good. I did a good job, or you did a good job. Yeah, so one alternative is to say, and is that Mechudash, or is that like obvious? That idea. I'll just repeat the idea again, just in case. Again, this is something that we did discuss already, but I want to elaborate a little more. I want to flesh out the implications more. What's the idea again?
That he has to be able to swear to contradict the Eid Echad.
And why is that Mechudash or not? As opposed to what? We need to say the words. I mean, I know what you mean. And I think you said it 100% correct. And it's, I mean, obviously, it's really, really important. But as opposed to what? I mean, what is there in that form, in that formulation that, you know, makes your head spin?
he can't just swear. I mean, the Eidach was not just mechuyav of a shvua in general, that he could just swear to support his claim. He has to.
Excellent. These are the key words of the word, like, you know, if people are writing a perush on chayim, right? What would be the key words? To support his claim, right? Meaning, that's what we underline in the chayim, Reb Chaim, you know, like whatever. No, exactly. The Bepashtos, no one ever would have thought, at least in my opinion, as like a muskal rishon, that a shvua has anything whatsoever to do. Shvua is not negative campaigning, you know, and you don't need negative campaigning. One would have thought that shvua comes under the rubric of birur, of sustaining his own claim, giving added credibility. You have a claim, which for whatever reason requires more support than your cheskas kashrus, maybe because it's contradicted by someone else, maybe because the objective circumstances in the case, right, establish, you know, this either is unlikely or is in opposition to some other halachic forces, like, mukzakos or things like that, right? So you need to somehow inject greater credibility, greater, you know, gravitas, something that gives your claim greater substance, right, Chaim? So one would have thought that, you know, Shvua does that. Again, whether it's, if it's only lahafis taitel shabala bias, then it's more peripheral, you know, more neutralized. If it's, like an outside shot, you know, Mayday pass, you know, Kadeshi Yoda, great. But even if you go further, one would have thought that there's a chiyu birur. You have to be mavara more. You need more than your word. If what's more than your word? So you're nishba. Okay, but that's always about the content of your argument. Right? The content of what you're saying. So here, that would translate, if we're not sure, you know, what's the safek here, Chaim? What's the open question here?
I'm not sure if in
this case, I mean, what's the issue? Everything you're saying is perfect so far. What's the, in this case, between the Toin and the Nitan, what's the argument? The argument isn't about the physical facts of the case, at least the immediate physical facts. It's not about Chatfi.
The argument is just on who owns the Nazca.
Yeah, who owned the Nazca beforehand, before the Chatfi. So he wants to take a Shvua, saying, Chatfi as Shali. Like, what's wrong with that Shvua? Right? That's why what Rashi, Rashbam, Rambam say, which is the problem, and that's exactly what the Gemara is asking, right? Lishtaba, let him take a shvua. Okay, what's the problem? Right? So the Gemara's answer is this so strange? Ha'amar bichta katfa. So what? Yeah, because that's not the dispute among them. No one's arguing he's not saying he wasn't kotev. Right? He's just saying shali chatfi. So let him clarify that with a shvua. Says Rashi, Rashbam, and Rambam, no, because then he's not, what? He's not calling the Eid Echad a liar. And there's some halacha that Shvua needs to call the source of information a liar. That's such a strange idea. So that's what we're going to pick up next time, but we'll try to go more quickly. But let's get the alternative down. What are the implications of that, Chaim? So that's, you're totally right. That's what the Rashbam says. You have the line there?
Yeah.
So when Rashi's working, right. So Rashbam is working very hard. Right, Chaim? Why is he working so hard? Do we agree that Rashbam is working hard?
I definitely agree with that.
Okay. Like all these extra words, starting from Dahachi. Dahachi mash makar la yakam edakha b'ish. Lekal avon l'chal chatas. L'shalim mamon hu kofer. Ba'ed mechaibo lo yakum. Aval kamu l'shua. All those extra. Hakchish es ha'ed shal l'chatach b'mamon zeh. All those words are superfluous. Seemingly. Right? Could have cut them all for the purpose of the Shakla Vatari and the Gemara. Right? Why is Rashbam saying them? Exactly, because he is totally aware in Shas, as far as I know, this is the, and again, that's another reason why this is such a land, it's a landmark case for the reasons that we discussed, and for the same reasons that we discussed, right? Number one, what's at stake in the interface and this discrepancy between the explicit Gemara and the implicit Gemara, which make it so memorable. But the reason for those things is also this, the conclusions that we walk away from. As far as I know, aside from this Gemara, there is no evidence, and of course some people interpret the Gemara differently, we'll get to that in a second, there is no objective evidence that what's being described here by the Rashbam and by Rashi in Shavuos and very much embraced, equally by the Rambam, is true. Because as we just said, logically, it's not so obvious. Pashtus is that Shavua is Levarer, like you said before, Tanaso. That's why Rashi added four lines. Rashbam added four lines here. You can almost see like the wind speed, this wheels spin, right? The wheels spinning. Like, how do you read this Gemara? Like, what's wrong? Take the Shavua. And the Gemara is saying, no. And they're come to this conclusion, Kivan the Amar. Like, what does that mean? So they came up with this independently because Rambam didn't get it from Rashi and the Rashbam. They didn't get it from the Rambam, which also just strengthens, the validity of the idea. But at the end of the day, you have to stop and take a step back, just like we are, and saying, your head's spinning. Like, where did this idea come from? That's not the Shavua that we, are accustomed to thinking about initially. Like, why would we? Tafasta beruba lo tafasta, right? There's no reason to think that a Shavua is a din in hakchashas hataina. It's a din in birur hataina on behalf of the Nishba, it's not a din in an attack against the Tobeya, or if, especially against the Aden or the force that's Mechayev the Shua. So that's why he's thinking, why does the Torah say Lo Yakom Eidachad Beish L'Kol Avon U'L'Kol Chatas? Right, which means what? L'Shalei Mamon Shu Kofer, but Eid Mechayev Lo Yakom. Avalkam l'shvua. So what he's basically trying to say, what's he saying with that, Chaim? He's saying, this must all go back to what? To the power latent in this chiyuv shvua. Namely, the Eid Echad himself. Maybe this isn't a characteristic in shvua generally. It's a characteristic in Shavuos Eid Echad. And where does it come from? Because the Eid Echad, basically, when the Torah says, L'yakum Eid Echad for this, for that, for the next thing, Avol Kamu B'Shavua, there are two opposite ways to interpret it. Chaim, namely? or three ways off, if you want to say, to interpret. But on the extreme. Chaim, you're on a roll. Don't stop now. Trust your instincts.
I mean, but what we were saying, that you could interpret it just that it's mechayev in general, a shvuah to support your claim.
I'm trying to explain why the Rashbam adds these five lines. He says he has a put it this way. Let me say this. The Rashi, Rashbam, Rambam came up with this pshat in the Gemara. They came up with it because the Gemara is objectively difficult. We just can't figure out why the guy cannot, if we were to believe him, in Chatfi v'didi Chatfi, he would be Potter. Correct? And the problem that we don't agree, believe him with a migu or whatever, right, is because what? Because of, you know, the chazaka, kol ma shetakas yadam rei shelo. On the other end is a migu. Like, so let him be nishba and tell the story. If so they ended up having to say, no, the shvua is not good enough here because somehow the shvua doesn't accomplish its goal, its typical goal. By doing that, they expanded the typical goal. Instead of being birur, taina sanitva, it became, at least in this case, shvua zeidachad, right, hakchoshas gavra hay, hakchoshas hamechayev shel hashvua. Not birur biglal hamechayev tzorech birur, you know, betanasa. Correct? So then right. The Rashbam, for that reason, the Rashbam added four lines. Like all of a sudden he's darshaning psukim. Who told him to darshan psukim here? There's nothing in the Gemara about. If you look in the Gemara here, is there any psukim here? No.
No.
So what's he doing darshaning psukim? The answer is he's going back to the drawing board. He's saying, well, why would this all be true? That it's a good pshat in the Gemara. We'll see the alternative in a minute. It's clear that it explains a lot. In this case, that's why it's such a landmark case, because it's provided us, in addition to, I'm not even talking about mitoch yet, forget about mitoch. We're not even up to that. But it provided us with a new perspective on the chiyuv and the tochen of Shua Seidachad, correct? So the Rashbam is going back to the drawing board. He's saying, you know, it's very interesting, you know, that when the Torah seems to be working hard, also eliminating the possibility, you know, that Eidachod would be Mechayiv Mamo. So there are two ways to look at that. And that is, it's not, because there's no din of Eidus, and Eidachod is not an Eidus, and certainly not Eidus Lagabe Mamon, and that's what the Torah is telling us. Or you could say the Torah is working hard because Yeshu Tvarim, they go. All things being equal, an Eidachod could be Mechayiv Mamo, or could be considered Eidus, Chatzah Shel Eidus. Right? And that's why we need the Torah to limit Lemaisa Befoal what the Eidachod is actually accomplishing. Once you look at it that way, then you could say, yeah. Right? But absent the Shvua, right, which neutralizes the Eidachad, he would really be he would be more like Shnai Medim than he would be, you know, Eidachad. So if that's the case, maybe it's not Chiyuv Levarer, maybe it's a Chiyuv Mamon, it's Eidachad equals Shnayim, unless you blow him out of the water. Unless you go for the jugular. Unless you really neutralize it. I mean, you have one chance, right, to offset the Seidachar. You have to be kofer or machish what he says. That's why the Rashbam is going back to the drawing board. He's saying, this Shakla Vitaria really is a landmark. It's forcing a reassessment of Eidachar. And Shua Seidachad. Correct? That's also Pshat in the Rambam. We don't need to go over the whole thing, but very quickly, Chaim, you saw it? You remember?
I didn't see it.
Who saw it more recently? Noam? Perek Dalet Halacha Ches, and also Hilchos Mabavla. Again, we discussed these extensively, so I don't think we need to, but just to remind us quickly, or Avi, you saw it? You remember it?
I haven't seen it recently.
Okay, now you, so, okay, I'll give you more Mamkomas, but look, Aryeh, how about you?
Sure. Right.
So just, you know, Perek Dalet Halacha Ches, then we'll stop in just a minute. I just want to get the alternative in. And raises the question, then we'll try to finish this off on Tuesday. Yeah.
Okay. Manali Biarchav, should I from the beginning or?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't mind. Manali Biarchav, right? Eight Echav, made it up. So you owe me a mana. I have eight Echav. Banithan Omer Keen, who have a Atachayli, Kenegado Samana, Hariz and Mukhi Yashuva, and Yachli Shava Mashal. Umunema and Yachli Shava, Sharehu Modu Masha, Heid Boha Aid. The Ein Hanishva Bahada Eid Echa Nishva Ach Yachish is the Eid of Yachar Veidu, so Vishavach Virasa.
Okay, so again, that's what I called the last time we saw this, like a couple of months ago, a triple formulation in the Rambam. Correct? Are you?
Yeah.
A triple formulation that says what? That says what? What's the upshot?
You need to be Machish the Eid Echa in what he said.
You need to be makish the eid echad. Again, you know, you read the Rambam, it sounds fine, but it's not, I mean, it is fine, but it, that does, it's tremendously mechudash. And I don't think half of the Rishonim would believe in it. You keep going.
Lefigach sarshi ish bo eid echad betan shaparo. You know, and you were toying the Yerupare. V'chim kapin shabal la eid echad betan shaparo. O'ch sarti l'chapi kodon. Reza mechu yeshua v'inei ochli shavu m'shalat.
This is what I mentioned before, that he quotes the landmark case. You know, he basically says, oh, this is Naskar Baba, my friends. The reason he's saying that is because it's so consequential. And, you know, that it forces you into this interpretation. What does Raidan say?
I was using the back of those Ohadars. I don't actually have the Raivid here. But
the back of the Osvahadar, they cut out the Raivid?
It appears like it.
Wow. That's just wrong. I mean, it's good they have the Rambam. That's good. But wow. Asher, there's something you can do about that? In your contacts? No? Okay. I don't know. That's just wrong. Anyways, the Raivid disagrees about the, right, the Raivid, you know, does anybody have the Raivid open?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, go ahead.
Omar Ram, Mishalim hu mamshel, or mimashel. Velama lo yakri sha'id, mikol vachol b'shvuato shepara. Lula el derech hekat et makam acher, shetan tchila bebetin lehadam, behotzi alav shtar ze shemakri sho behalva, v'achak achamar levitu parati, v'haya lo lizar bedvarav.
So what do you make of it, Noam?
He says you should just be Makesh the Eid per, let's say, the simple read of Eid Echad, as we want to say.
Yeah. And then he, Ad Kedei Kach, that he's trying to reinterpret the whole case, you know, at least one of the cases, it's called Omer Lolovisi Kilo Lolopa, right. Okay, so on the Eid Echad Bishtar Parua that we discussed already, I don't really need to go over that again. If we're going to get to next year, we'll definitely discuss it more. Namely, the idea that like why can't Jesus say paraiti, you know, in Eid Echad b'Shvua? So I was trying to suggest, based on Reb Chaim understood from that Rambam, that the din of Shtar Chabiyani, my boy, I'm speaking quickly in shorthand because I think that's just something we did earlier, that Shtar Chabiyani, my boy, isn't just a anumnana, but Shtar Chabiyani, my boy, is an edus. On the other hand, there's no hakasha sagavra when he says, it's not the Edom themselves are not saying lo para, right? Because they're not even there. There's no pretense that they're there. So Chefsa Shel Edus says lo para. The Gavra Edom don't say anything. So it could be that the Raivid is particularly troubled because he doesn't like that distinction between Gavra Edom and Chefsa Shel Edus, maybe. Or maybe doesn't accept this whole concept of, you know, Shaka Biyana my boy, not being, you know, being Eidos. I don't want to, we don't need to re-prosecute that particular case, et cetera. But what, for our purposes right now, what's clear is that the landmark, case cited by the Rambam, namely Naskar Rababa, is about this triple formulation. I think the triple formulation includes Yafti Makhish the Gavra Eidim, Yafti Makhish the Chetza Shal Eidos. When is there a difference between those two things in Shtar? Exactly. But the point is, for the Rambam, you need to blow the Eid Echad out of the water. Otherwise, the Eid Echad turns into Eidim or Eidus. And once that happens, all bets are off. Okay. So that's the Rambam and Rashi and the Rajba. The difficulty is, what does that have to do with Goslin? Right, our gears on the Gemara is Kagazla. One of the benefits, again, if you accept Rashi, Rajbam, Rambam, very mechudash reading of the Gemara, and then he came up with this massive new yesod about the koach of an Eid Echad and the nature of Shvuas Eid Echad, two things to think about. One is, are there going to be, before we get to the problem, two things to think about. Are there other echoes of Eid Echad's, mamon, mechayev koach, right? There should be, if that's really what's implicit in this view, it shouldn't just be limited to this one thing. That's number one. So, right, that's something that we need to think about. Number two, is this function of Shavua, right, to machish, the mechayev, is that typical of other Shavuos? It's another question. Or is that unique to Shavua Seir Echad? Maybe Dafka and Shavua Seir Echad, you have this because of Eid Echad. So number one, are you going to find other echoes of Eid Echad's wider mamon role? And number two, is the Shvua Seid Echad paradigm that we're encountering here, is that comparable to things like Moda B'Miktsas, especially Shomrim? Are they also kind of attacking their Mechaidim, or are they just Beirurim? And then in which case are there huge gaps or differences in the Shvua Saraisa? Okay? Either way, a third question to think about, do these questions, namely the role of the Shvua as a birur, or the role of the Shvua as a, kind of a blow them out of the water, neutralizing Mechayev idea, do these end up defining, right, the next line of the Gemara, Tov Sheni Chal Shavam Mishalim, right, the ability of Shvua in some cases to be converted into Mam. In other words, if you take the view that the Mechayvim, let's say in this case, Eid Echad, and that's also going to be food for thought, whether you distinguish it in the Mechayvim, if Eid Echad is Mechayv Mamon, but, so the idea that the Shvua is a Ptur, not just a Ptur, it's not the object of the Chiyuv, namely additional or more substantial or qualitatively superior Birur. Right, it's more about, let's say, the battle here is in the backgrounds in the mechayvim, right? So here it's the mechayiv of the gavra Eid Echad, right? Questioning his credibility. I guess in the case of Moda B'Miktsas, we'll have to talk about it. In the case of Moda B'Miktsas and Shomrim, it would be about their mechayvim, whatever that is. Taina Chashuva, Taina, Hafkada, Hashava, right? But the point is that, if you go that route, then Mitoch Shenichal Shavam Shalom isn't about the conversion of Shvua into Mamon. It's about, what always was in the background, namely the potential key of Mamon, the only obstacle to which was the Shvua, which has now been neutralized, and therefore Mimela, you go back to point, number one. So those are the three things to think about. The problem to think about, the fourth point, which is the problem, is can you sustain the girsa of the Gemara, which says what? What's the gears of the Gemara? Which line is a problem line?
Havalei Kegazel.
Exactly. Well said, Aryeh. Havalei Kegazel. So there is actually debate in the Rishonim whether that is a correct girsa or not. The point is, you don't need Havalei Kegazlan if you hold like Rashi, Rajbam, and Rambam. Are you why?
Because it's not about being like a Gazlan, it's more just that you have to be Kofar and
you haven't utilized the Shvua in an effective way. So, like, why call names? So, if you didn't have the Girsa, everything would be fine. If you do have the Girsa, what would you say about it? What would you say about if we do have the Girsa? If you don't have the Girsa and you hold this way, it would be easier. But some of the Rishonim did have the Girsa. So, there are still two things you can do. I would say. Are you? What do you think?
It could either just be a comparison to another soul of another person who can't make a Shua.
Who does that?
It's just a comparison to another person who can't make a Shua.
No, 100%. Correct. And who, which Rishon does that?
I think the Rashbam. But...
Exactly. Yeah. The Rashbam totally neutralizes that line. It's like he's stuck with it. You know, what's he going to do? That's the Kirsa and the Gemara. But he totally thinks, based on the bigger evidence, here, the Gabe Hach Shvua Pasul Kigazlan Eitzel Kol Shvuos the Leisul Amemar Lishtaba the Didei Chatav Shevzu Shvua Mutelas Alam Lemifter Below Kuli Yafshar etc. He basically just makes that line into nothing. It's Bedokach Parshanut wise, it's not so great. It would be better if you could drop it. But he's saying, oh, just like a Gazlan is puzzle, you know, le'edus, le'shua, so too, this is inadequate. And if you make it, it wouldn't work. It's another way of saying, it's another way of saying the shua doesn't work. What's the alternative? And this will stop for today. Yisrael, what do you think? What's the alternative? Oh, Aryeh, go ahead. Aryeh, go ahead.
Due to the Eidachat, he becomes like a Gazlan because like it's not rightfully his, so he needs to defend himself, and he's not defending himself.
Exactly. If you want to dig in, what you could say is the following, and then let's just contrast this with the other mainstream view. What is the other mainstream view, Aryeh, since you're doing so well on it? What's the other mainstream read the Gemara and say you don't want to read like the Rashi, Rajbam, Rambam? You don't want to have to be committed to this idea that the Eidachat needs to be blown out of the water. You know, you have to go for the jugular. Let's say that's not what that's. What does that have to do with Shvua? It's not the Koach of an Eidachon. What's the other way to read the Gemara?
Like through the Chazaka, there was other guys. You're considered like a Kegazlan.
Meaning, you have to build up the real point is the Kegazlan and the Psul Shvua. But you're not allowed to take the Shvua because you're a Pasul because you're a Gazlan. Now the problem with that is, of course, the catch-22. Right? I mean, what do you mean you're a Gazlan? If we let you come to Bezin and take the Shvua, you're not going to be a Gazlan. You're claiming that you're not. That's the whole point. That's a catch-22. Right? So number one, you're assuming the catch-22 is not an obstacle to that status. Right? You know, once you... And number two, you're assuming that the Chazaka Komashatachas Yadada Marei Shalo is a really powerful force. Correct? And that is the view of Maletosis, basically, right? Which we'll analyze next time. So if you're either not so happy with the powerful nature of Chazakko Mashatakas, it's one thing to say Komakshatakas Yadada Marei Shalo legally, to say, and therefore everybody who is apparently in defiance even before he explains himself as a Gazlan. Right? That's very big leap. So that's what I'm saying. That's an implicit assumption. And even if you let him take the Shvua because he's already Pasul, even though the Shvua would establish that he's not a Gazan and that he's not Pasul, correct? But that's the alternative way to read the Gemara. Those are the assumptions upon which it is based. But if you hold like the Rambam and the Rashi and the Rashbam, although the Rashbam doesn't go this route, and that's fine, I understand why. What you could say, Aryeh, is what? What you said a second ago, but just repeat it, and then it actually, if you're going this way, it actually is some benefit. The Havalei Kegazlan for Tosfos and those who build on the Chazaka and ignore the Catch-22, that Yirsa is actually the Mechayev. It explains the most difficult part of the song. I mean, why not just take the Shvuah and end it? The answer is you can't, because formally, legally, you don't have that option, correct? But if you hold like the Rambam, otherwise, and Rashi, Aryeh, what's the benefit?
Just describing a bigger point that it's not the Iker isn't that you're a Goslin. The Iker is just your puzzle to make a Shuan. It's just a comparison.
Right. But you being a Goslin, right, that's not part of the Mechayiv of this din, but the fact that you are a Goslin is a result also of the alternative reading of the whole sugya, which was that the Eid Echad is really believed on the Namonus level, like Shnai Medim, until you're Makhish. Right? So what's at stake in being Makhish is not only his fate in this particular case, but also his status as a Goslin in general or only in this case. That we'll discuss a little bit also, you know, for next. Ravon has something to say about that. Because you can see he's not Shnai Medim. Right? But in other words, the Havalei Kegazlan and the potential of, you know, even going forward, Psulim actually becomes energized, if you hold like Rashi, Rashbam, Rambam, you know, but for a totally different reason. Right? Very good. Okay. So we'll stop here, try to finish up, and I'll send Mar Makomos in terms of some broader Hidachot Shnaimed. Look at the Gemara and Shvuah stuff, Mem Omen Aleph, if you can. And, you know, Komak Mishashnai B'chayim Noso, Eid Echad B'chayim Shvuah. And I'll give some sources and things to look at. But look also even there, at the Rush on Mem Omen Aleph and Shavuos, and at the Rimigash and Rashi on Lamed Beis Omen Aleph and Shavuos, where the Gemara discusses where Eid Echad is B'chayim, you know, for purposes of Shavuos, Eidos B'chayim Mamon or Shvuah. Okay, and I'll send some other things. And then we'll try to do from there, maybe Taluya Vizab, and we'll do this will be our second topic. Okay? So look forward to seeing you all in person. Enjoy the rest of the week. And Tuesday, so make Tuesday at 11. All right? In person. Okay. Kol Tov.